Thank God people can't hear me during the commercial break. Welcome back in. Final hour, Monday, live from St. Thomas Sports Park here on 104.5 The Zone. I was in the middle of an expletive-laden tirade in the direction of our guest now, Mike Giardi of the NFL Network, who sits down with us at the desk. Hello, friend.
Yeah, you know, I'm just sitting here minding my own business. We're talking, we're chatting, and all of a sudden you're hitting me with some words that really aren't fit for radio or anywhere else for that matter. My feelings were hurt.
No, they shouldn't be. They you know, my feelings were hurt when you said you arrived in my city yesterday. Of course, you can watch NFL Network all day long for training camp coverage. They've got people all over the place. Giardi is here with us for the day, just for the day. But I was hurt and offended when I saw that you had arrived in my city and that you did not see a billboard with my face on it.
I don't understand why there aren't everywhere. Like, I should be driving around the stadium, and I should see your head on each section, like east, west, north, and south.
Instead of Brett Kern on the banner, it should be me.
Yeah, I mean, the punter.
We're in agreement.
Right?
Yeah, but he's the punter.
Yeah, he is the
punter.
The punter. Is true.
That's about, yeah, that's probably the least likely one that I could unseat. At Mike Giardi is where you can follow him. All right, so you came out. What did you come out here to see, and what did you see?
I mean, I was obviously... You're looking to see Julio's integration into the offense and what that looks like. And, you know, we finally get to see him do some extensive reps or semi-extensive reps, 7-on-7, 11-on-11. And midway through practice, he goes down.
A little banged up.
Yeah, a little banged up and ends up retreating to the facility. And we don't see him again the rest of the day. But, I think at the end of his time in Atlanta, he wasn't practicing a ton. I don't really worry about him integrating himself in the offense. You just have to make sure he's as healthy as he can possibly be, because you want to get as many reps with him and A.J. Brown in this offense as possible, because I think that, it's, no one has that.
No, nobody has that. I'm still shocked that they have that. Like, it's such a foreign concept for me to still hear from you. You're in town to see how Julio Jones is out here working out on the practice field.
Well, look, I've been at Patriots camp, which is sort of my home base for the last few days, and they made upgrades to their receiving core and their tight end core, and I still look at them and go, okay, it's better, but yeah. It's not. But then you come here and you're like, well, I mean, AJ is already a clear-cut number one, and now you just added one of the best receivers in the history of the game who, even though he was hurt last year, still produced some pretty big numbers when he played, and I think that they firmly believe that he is still that guy, so it's just keeping him fresh. And, you know, I mean, if I'm Ryan Tannehill, like, this is, couldn't have asked for a better situation. I've been in a great situation for 2 years, and now I get Julio? Come on.
Sure. He just has to now stop throwing interceptions during practice.
Yeah, look, and Mike wasn't, we just talked to Mike Vrabel a little bit. I'm not pleased with a couple of those decisions. In fact, there was one, I think it was to the sidelines. I think Fulton picked it off, and it was like, hey, look, they blitzed. We didn't pick it up great. That ball's got to be in the dirt. You got to make a better decision. So I'm sure the quarterback could get squeezed a little bit. But, hey, I think some of this, too, especially at this time of year, like, sometimes you're just trying stuff. I don't know if you're trying that to the outside sidelines, but some of these throws I think he's made, and reading about them the last couple of days and seeing some of them today, all right, I'm going to throw it up there. Well, can I trust that guy? Can he go get it? You know, can I fit it in there? Okay, I can't. I'll make a note.
Yeah, now you and I, Mike Giardi of the NFL Network, here with us on 104.5 The Zone. We're talking about training camp because, of course, we are live at training camp today. People, Mike, I have had callers just waiting to jump down the throat of Ryan Tannehill in a way that I find inexplicable. Because I understand, you know, the list season that we all have just mercifully come out of, that he's not on ESPN's top 10, yeah, that he's getting disrespected on the internet, God forbid. But here I don't get it. Here I don't understand why there is not just a little more, that he doesn't have a little more rope. I understand that the Baltimore playoff loss here in Nashville in January was, you know, stop Derrick Henry and make Tannehill try and beat us, and he didn't beat them. So I understand that the last, you know, Henry said it last week when he was up here at the podium with us, you're only as good as your last game, and Ryan Tannehill's last game was not great. Mm-hmm. But we are on day one of week two of training camp, and people are ready to just savage this guy for throwing five interceptions in training camp, and that is something that's foreign to me.
Yeah, I don't get it, especially when you look at the history here, and when was the last time they had a good quarterback? It was Steve McNair, right?
Not in the entire 6 years that I've lived here.
Exactly. And now the way he's played the last couple of years should give him some cachet with the fan base. But okay, be that what it is. You know, like, what's better? Like, what were they supposed to do?
Here's what I'll tell you. Not DeShone Kizer.
No.
He is not better.
No, not Logan Woodside.
No.
Ryan Tannehill, you're going to you're going to go as he goes. And I just think he's done enough for them in the last 2 years, and now you've given him more pieces to be even better this season. I'm not worried about this part of it. I wouldn't worry about this part of it. I think you can win. I believe you can win a Super Bowl with Ryan Tannehill as your quarterback.
Well, and the division just got, theoretically, a hell of a lot easier. Carson Wentz, your colleague Ian Rappaport, reporting, based off a Frank Reich press conference, that he is out 5 to 12 weeks, which is a timeline that Mike Vrabel found laughable, because Mike Vrabel does not do timelines. And he said, you know, if you're going to toss it out there, 5 to 12 weeks. I don't know if you're getting a signal, by the way, that you need to do something. Carl's circling around here. Carl, do you need him back, or can I keep him for a minute? All right.
Carl just wanted to come check in.
No, he harasses me about things that I say on the radio. It's quite flattering. But Carson Wentz now down for the foreseeable future. The trade that Indy made to get him from Philly, I thought, was basically a bet against Carson Wentz's health with the conditional second round pick and the way that they kind of structured that. This is their division to lose at this point, no?
You would think, right? I mean, unless the Colts can catch lightning in a bottle with someone who fills in for him. And at this point, they're talking about, or at least the media is talking about, the idea of going and getting Nick Foles, which absolutely blows my brain into a million pieces.
Light the world on fire.
I can't. I mean, I'm sorry, but if you made the acquisition of Wentz and you know the history there, I just, you can't do it. I just don't think you can do it. Maybe you hope Trey Lance catches fire in San Francisco for the next month, and you know they don't have to pay. Like, if Jimmy's not on the opening day roster, that money's not guaranteed. I mean, even that seems like a reach. But Nick Foles, no, don't do it if you're Chris Ballard. Don't do it if you're Frank Reich.
And that is, I think that's where a lot of people's minds automatically leap to, because of the history, the same way why people thought there might be a Wentz revival possible under Frank Reich, because of the history that they have together. But I mean, I've been, and I don't know, I don't cover the Colts, I'm not in Indianapolis to see it, but Mike, I've been saying this for months since they traded for him. I watched him last year, and I'm looking at Marcus Mariota, just a broken quarterback at the end of his, not career, because of course he can still be serviceable in spots, but there is nothing there that indicates to me that the problems with Carson Wentz are fixable at this point.
Yeah, they're relying heavily on that past relationship with Reich. And look, if you go back and read some of the stuff as the fallout happened and he gets his way and he gets moved out of town, he wasn't taking the hard coaching, wasn't taking full responsibility for some of the things that went wrong on the field. And if you go back in his history, Frank gave him hard coaching. So I would imagine that there was a conversation before this deal was even pulled off and be like, look, I'm going to push you like I pushed you before. You better be willing to handle it, otherwise we're going to have a problem here. And I think Carson just wanted out of Philly so bad. Yeah, I mean, look, Carson knows where he's gone. Like, he can throw his chest out and say, like, well, it wasn't really my fault, but the numbers aren't lying here. You haven't been good for a year and a half, and, you know, it's time now. You're on your last opportunity where they're giving you the job, where you don't have to earn the job. They're giving you the job. So, yeah, it's a tough break for them, but if I'm Carson, you know, I just stay in that building. I keep grinding. I keep building up trust with my teammates, because that was another issue we had in Philly. The teammates lost trust in them there at the end.
Mike Giardi of the NFL Network here with us on 104.5 The Zone. You're in town for not much longer. You were in town last night. Did you pedal tavern? Did you honky tonk? Did you just wash yourself in Delta variant and go about with the people?
I stayed to myself. You know, so
it's like there's something going on, Mike.
Well, you know, here's the thing too. Now that we've started back and, you know, we're all together again and we're doing all this stuff.
Lovely to see you, by the way.
Yes, I've never been happier. You're way too close to me, by the way. You got to pay attention. You got to be careful here, because I want to make it through a full season too. I don't want to get sick, you know, like, and even if you're sick for a little bit and it's not a big deal, can't be missing games now.
No,
They pay me to play, baby. I gotta play.
Well, and if there's games forfeited, then I'm certain it comes out of our paychecks just as much as it comes out of the players' paychecks.
Imagine if you're on that team and that happens, and it's because of a couple guys that didn't get vaccinated. Like, how does that not fracture a team? Because that's money. You're taking money out of my pocket.
I would fight a dude in the street if that kind of stupidity cost me my money.
Is that what happens at 104.5 The Zone?
That's
yeah.
No, I'm the worst of them. There are four shows. I'm the only individual one, so you know that I'm extra strident to make up for the lack of ego that the rest of the shows have. I immediately, in my first month on the job, moved everything around in the studio for the way that it's been for probably 20 years.
Yep.
And they all hate me now. But Lucas Panzeca, my producer, is back there chirping at us. What do you want to add?
I'm just confirming your report.
Well, nobody needs your confirmation, smartass. Get out of here. Mike Giardi at, is it Michael Giardi?
I don't even know.
That's so obnoxious.
I don't really.
Who are you trying to fool?
No, see, it's at Mike Giardi.
But you've changed it since that. But your Twitter name is Michael Giardi.
Yes. The thing with the blue check mark is Michael Giardi, but it's at Mike Giardi.
The thing with the blue check mark. Now, in my experience, the thing with the blue check mark is the only thing that matters. I say that because I have one now. I'm very excited about it.
It took a long time, and actually, I think there's been some people that have appealed to Twitter to get it removed, which makes a lot of sense.
You and Diana Rossini just plotting against me in the group chat.
Ah, Rossini.
I'm being undermined. Yeah, the last time Mike was on the radio show, he called Jersey and Rossini trash just on principle. And so this.
I still hold to that. I doubled down.
I was going to say this appearance has been much more diplomatic. Get the hell out of here. You got TV to do.
All right, man.
Mike Giardi of the NFL Network. Watch their coverage all day long on the NFL Network across the training camps. We will come back and we will react to day 5 of Titans training camp practice. I'm Buck Rising. This is 104.5 The Zone. Fun times, I think, with Mike Giardi of the NFL Network. Amateur though he may be, but always enjoy. It's just nice to see my friends out of training camp. I'm sure we will see many more of them roll through in the next couple of weeks. Out here, thanks to our friends at Two Rivers Ford, powered by Ford, driven by people. Just 7 miles east of Nashville International Airport is where you can find the non-commissioned sales staff at Two Rivers Ford. They're making our training camp coverage possible for you and for us. We appreciate them doing so. 615-737-1045 is how you jump in on the conversation. 615-737-1045. So, out here at Titans training camp, Ryan Tannehill, a 6th interception so far through, not through today, but 6 interceptions total through training camp so far. And we talked about this with Giardi. Just allow... I am shocked by the lack of grace period, even on Twitter that I know to be poisonous, that I know to be the worst possible place to receive analysis and to receive things like, you know, missed kicks by kickers on Saturday, the shanked 50-yarder that apparently cost Blake Hawbeil his job here, and bringing in Sam Ficken. But I think that Ryan Tannehill probably deserves a slightly bigger grace period than the one our audience has been willing to offer him so far. Certainly Darrington, who, you know, of course, called him Matt Schaub, basically, when he first called in a couple of weeks ago. Lucas, you have some breaking news on the volunteers front, yes?
Yes, Tennessee has gained its highest-rated recruit in Josh Heupel's 2022 recruiting class with 4-star offensive lineman Addison Nichols committing to Tennessee over Ohio State and North Carolina.
It's an important, I mean, this is where they need to continue to stack, I mean, not to be cliche, but stack days, stack players, the depth on this team so far, and if you can find top-end talent, the offensive line should be in good shape for the University of Tennessee, despite the transfers, despite the losses. Somebody like Trey Smith, who's been an institution as a part of that university and the culture of that program under Jeremy Pruitt, when things were not good, Trey Smith was the only thing that seemed to be truly good throughout the course of all of that. Offensive line, though, I feel like you're in a pretty good spot heading into the 2021 season in Knoxville.
I would agree. Yeah, I mean, Cooper Mays, you feel like could slide in at center playing alongside Cade, which is still kind of unknown where Cade Mays will play on that offensive line. But this is a big get. For Heupel, the question mark will be recruiting defense. You had 5-star defensive lineman, the top D lineman in the country, Walter Nolan, moved to Knoxville. He's enrolled at Powell High School right there in the neighborhood, right a few minutes away from campus. So that will be the big thing, is what he can do defensively when it comes to recruiting. But yeah, today the highest-rated recruit in Tennessee's class has committed.
Well, hey, I don't give a damn about defense. Just score more points. Score all of the points. Be Ole Miss. Yeah, at some point, you're going to have to care about defense. You're going to have to get a stop against Alabama or Georgia or Florida. Or, you know, hell, it would be nice to get a stop against, like, Vanderbilt with a terrible quarterback.
Although Josh Heupel won't be trolling his own defense like Lane Kiffin has been.
Respect. I saw Ken Seals, the quarterback for Vanderbilt, signed a name, image, and likeness deal to do like a weekly podcast appearance. I'm pretty sure with Braden Gall over there at four, not with Braden, but with the Vandy sports podcast that they have over there on 440 Network. That's pretty interesting. Should we, Lucas, should we as a show, now I'm going to get in trouble with legal again. I'm going to have lawyers after me. Should we invest in a name, image, and likeness player? Should we sponsor an athlete? I mean, it would have to be somebody local, right?
Yeah.
This is a good question. Perhaps we should ponder this now. Immediately watch. I'll get text being like, you can't say that on the air. Or things that not until it's gone through the legal vetting process. And now, you know, I'm going to just Venmo some poor college kid like $500
a week.
Be like, hey, you are now the Buck Rising Show's official sponsored athlete, like Barstool, just passing out Instagram followers for all these kids to make tens of thousands of dollars, which is a really cool initiative by them. It was smart. 615-737-1045. So just kind of wrapping up on the Titans before we move to something that was deeply concerning over the weekend that involved Lucas, myself, and a handful of DMs from a wife of a listener who we are happy to hear is back on solid ground, it would seem. But more than anything, I think how they continue to monitor Julio is going to be a storyline, where today you saw him going through more extensive reps than he has to any point. Typically, it's just been, you know, go through stretch, go through individual. Maybe you do a little one-on-one work pre-practice, but you're not exerting too much stress, too much strain throughout the course of the practice because they're just trying to make sure that they're managing his body correctly. Now, he told us when he spoke with the media on Saturday that his health is 100%, that he's back. They're just basically feeling each other out between the team, Julio, and the training staff that they're working with. Mike Otto says on YouTube, where you can hang out with us on Zone TV, I get taking chances you wouldn't ordinarily take during camp, but at what point do the interceptions start taking a toll on confidence?
Taking a toll on confidence, I'm not worried about Ryan Tannehill's confidence. I don't think there's any reason to be worried about Ryan Tannehill's confidence. That noise that you hear, by the way, in the background is the smell of diesel and fresh-cut grass as they are mowing the fields, the third field, out here at St. Thomas Sports Park. I would say to you that, you know, if I start to physically see his body language stink, if I start to see a lack of energy, a lack of bounce back from Ryan Tannehill, then you can start to be concerned about interceptions. But that's not what I think people, and there's no way for the audience to know, right, exactly what we're looking at. They just see that we tweet out Ryan Tannehill throws his sixth interception of training camp, and the assumption without videos of it is that just Ryan Tannehill looks like hell. No, I mean, he's probably doing some stuff that he otherwise in game situations wouldn't do. You heard Vrabel talk about Thursday's practice being disappointing in the element of, you know, if they were in game situations, they would have been a team that was being taken advantage of because they were making mistakes that allowed the opponent to do so. 615-737-1045. Let us go to Scott in Bethpage, who has a quick comment about UT recruiting and then wants to talk about Ryan Tannehill. What's up, Scott?
Hey, Buck. It's good to talk to everybody's daddy this morning. Real quick, on Tannehill, first of all, I mean, I'm gonna try to keep it real quick. AFC Championship game next year, win the division, go to the playoffs. Derrick Henry has been great with Tannehill there. That's I'm gonna leave it at that. I'm not saying Tannehill is the reason why the King is great, but I'm saying there's an obvious compliment there that I think a lot of fans are missing, and Tannehill has nothing to prove to anyone, and I don't understand why anybody gets worked up over camp, but he has zero to prove. He's been durable. He came here, he did what he was supposed to do when he got here. He took over for a quarterback that couldn't get it done and took them places they haven't been in a long time. I'll leave that there. On the recruiting, the reason why Walter Nolan is put Tennessee in their top five, nothing to do with Josh Heupel. It's nothing to do with him. It's all Rodney Garner. If Garner stays at Tennessee and shows that D-line can perform under him like it did at Auburn, Walter Nolan, I'm putting money that dude seriously considers us. And I'm almost going to say he's going to pick us. if Garner shows that he can do with our line what he has done over the years with teams. That's why Walter Nolan will come to Tennessee. Now, it has nothing to do with Heupel. Thanks, guys. Love the show, always.
Hey, thanks, Scott. 615-737-1045 is how you jump in on the conversation. So let's take that in two parts. I'm of the belief, I'm with Scott in the regard that, you know, Ryan Tannehill during the regular season has nothing to prove to me. I would like to see him take a step forward in the postseason in terms of stakes, in terms of performance, how he individually steps up and carries his team. We have seen him do that in moments. Now, though, during this window is when those expectations are highest, when you've gotten the much anticipated trade target in Julio Jones, one that we would have thought was unthinkable 6 months ago. When you have A.J. Brown heading into year three that seems to be at the height of his powers thus far, coming off two knee issues last year, and now finding ways to further eclipse the ceiling that he's already set for himself. Derrick Henry, a 2,000-yard rusher, somebody who seems to be without precedent at the position. Derrick Henry probably, and with the extra game, this is possible. I think it would be difficult under normal circumstances. I don't doubt anything that Derrick Henry will ever do until we start to see him physically decline, and there's no such signs of that so far. There's been no other 2,000-yard rusher that has come back the following season and eclipsed the 1,500-yard mark. That's been the high water mark for NFL running backs coming off a 2,000-yard season. Of course, there's only been eight of them, including Derek. This extra regular season game allows Derek to have, you know, to possibly eclipse that. You know, back-to-back 2,000-yard seasons would almost be unthinkable. But Derek Henry is a player who's in the progress or who's in the process of building a Hall of Fame resume. So Ryan Tannehill, I don't look at him with the same scrutiny that it seems that, like a lot of people in my Twitter mentions, or maybe Darrington, some of our other callers, do as well. Then to Walter Nolan, because for those of you who, and I'm sure most of you are up on UT recruiting, but Walter Nolan is the top defensive line prospect in the country right now. He recently moved to Knoxville, Tennessee, played high school football there. He has now added Tennessee. Lucas, correct me if I'm wrong, to his top five. I think he brought it down from like a top eight.
Tennessee was not in his top eight, but they have made his top five.
Right. So I think the balance of power. Listen, it's of course better to have this recruit who is now strongly, or at least considering, I don't know how strongly top five consideration is, but who is at least living within, you know, miles of your facility, miles of your university. It bodes well for your increased chances to be able to recruit him. And again, I think I made the mistake there of talking about Heupel in recruiting in the same way that I think a lot of people make the mistake of, just when they talk about the Titans' defensive failures last year, putting all of the blame on Shane Bowen's shoulders, right? Josh Heupel is not solely responsible for the recruiting of players. Of course, the coaching staff, the assistant coaches, right? Brian Niedermeyer, before he was a part of this crew that got popped for NCAA recruiting violations, regarded as one of the best recruiters in the country. In fact, they kept having to give him pay raises as a linebacker's coach to keep him around because he had performed at such a high level. Now, that seems like there may have been some some inappropriate behavior in all of that, which, good for him for making a bag off off not proper protocols. But I would say to you that it is not lost. It is a good reminder, though, to keep in mind. What's the name of the defensive line coach that he brought up?
It's Rodney Garner, and Scott is spot on. That was Tennessee's most underdeveloped position group last season because Jeremy Pruitt fired defensive line coach Jimmy Brumbaugh 3 weeks into the season and then took over the duties himself. And Garner is one of the best defensive line coaches in the country. I think it's the best hire Heupel made on this staff. He's one of the best recruiters on Auburn staff when he was there, on Georgia staff when he was there, and the list goes on. Yeah, I think Scott is spot on about Rodney Garner. He's going to be so critical in recruiting and development of Tennessee's defensive line, and maybe it starts with the five-star in Walter Nolan.
Yeah, there sure is hell opportunity for him in Knoxville. There is no doubting that. I think that's the only non-Titans conversation we've had. So when we come back, Lucas Panzeca will do the polls. We will talk about a listener that we may have lost and then found again Saturday night, and a massive victory in the Gold Cup final for the U.S. men's national team against Mexico. A victory for all of the United States. We come back, do that next, wrap up the show. I'm Buck Rising. This is 104.5 The Zone. Getting ready to wrap up the show here. Final segment on this Monday. We hope that we've kept you entertained for the last 2 hours and change. Blaine and Mickey are going to do the same coming up next for certain. Poll questions come your way momentarily with Lucas Panzeca. Lucas, I think I'm going to rebel against Zone TV for the remainder of the time out here at Titans Trader Camp. I want to stand up. I want to walk around. I don't want to sit in front of this Zoom screen staring at you sad in a dark studio. This is not what this is not how I choose to live my life.
Maybe our Zone TV audience doesn't want to stare at your torso for the last segment.
Well, it's better than me flipping them the bird because I was shooting Giardi the middle finger. Just ends up on camera. Solid. I apologize to all of our who was the 9-year-old that called into the show last week? Don't point the camera up at me, Andrew. I'm avoiding the camera. These people are too damn helpful out here. 615. No, I don't know why I'm giving out the number. The show's over. Let's do some polls.
I don't know who you are, but I know what it's time for. A poll update on the Buck Rising Show. Here's a young man with a very particular set of skills. With the final numbers, here's Buck Rising Show correspondent and producer, Lucas Panzeca.
How many games will Carson Wentz start this season? Now, we posted this obviously before the news that he will be out for 5 to 12 weeks with foot surgery, but didn't really change the results because 96% of you say 10 or less. Only 4% said all 17, and it looks like those 96% will most likely be correct.
I mean, 5 to 12 weeks, it's just hilarious that Vrabel won't give a timeline on any of his players, but instead gets asked about a timeline for a quarterback for another team.
He chuckled about it, too. He's like, yeah, they really gave themselves some space to be right?
You know what that's called? Sweet justice. It will be interesting to see whether Carson Wentz, I mean, the 75% is the mark that he needs to hit if they don't make the playoffs, Indianapolis, for that conditional second-round pick to turn into a first-round pick that the Eagles acquired in the trade. 70% making the playoffs. 70% and making the playoffs, or 75% of the offensive snaps for Carson Wentz. Those are the terms of the deal that was done. I mean, it seems like an inevitability that this thing is going to come crashing down on the Colts' head. And I don't know how they feel about Jacob Eason. I just see the tweets from people like Mike Wells at ESPN where he's saying that the favorite target so far of Jacob Eason is linebacker Bobby Okereke. Not great. Not great, Bob.
What is the worst concert experience that you have ever had? We got some great responses on this. First Bucket said, dragged to a Dave Matthews Band concert. God, he sucks.
Okay, so I have been to one Dave Matthews concert in my life.
I've been to like three.
Why?
Okay, because he came to Birmingham like every year when I was in high school, and I somehow ended up with tickets. I never once paid for them.
So I went like the year after we were all out of college, my roommates, we all wanted to, he does like a 2-day or a 3-day caravan in Indianapolis. And we went, and it sounded like for 3 days of Dave Matthews playing, it just sounded like the same song for two hours every day. Like, it's just the same, you know, 17-minute violin solo. It's just, I don't understand the Dave Matthews hype, but, you know, he is a cult. One of my buddies has the dumb Fire Dancer logo tattooed on the back of his calf like an idiot. It's not great.
Our boy Joshua Clay, who you can hear afternoons traffic right here on The Zone, says the LMFAO concert when Indy hosted the Super Bowl easily was the worst.
I was there at the LMFAO concert. That was the Patriots Giants part two in Indianapolis, and they had the entire Indy did the Super Bowl really well, and the weather held up because February in Indy is not necessarily a pleasant experience. But the LMFAO concert was, you know, largely terrible because LMFAO is largely terrible, and they were the live entertainment.
Hey, they like ruled Billboard charts for a couple of years there.
Oh, yeah, because we're all drunk idiots, and the song called Shots is just basically music porn.
By the way, Joshua Clay, his band, I went out and saw them at the end on Saturday night, The Reveal. Check them out. They're phenomenal. Josh is an insanely talented dude, and we had a great time on Saturday.
It's true. It is true. It cracks me up that Josh, I mean, it doesn't crack me up. I'm very proud of them because I used to live in the apartment next to Josh and his bandmates when we first moved down here 6 years ago out in Bellevue. And it's funny to, you know, think about the dude that we were just sitting around in the living room while they're jamming out with his bandmates. They're now out performing and killing it on a regular basis. I know Lucas was out there Saturday. We need to get out to a show. Maybe we take people to a show. People that listen to the show, we'll take them to a show, and then Josh will be able to serenade us with the expertise on the guitar.
Jared says, Michael Bolton in Vegas. As a kid with my parents, I was thrown up on by the adults behind me who were drinking vodka and ruined my Pirates hat forever.
So I've never been thrown up on at a concert, but I did throw up on somebody. That did happen to me.
Somebody said, who parties that hard at a Michael Bolton concert?
Well, I mean, listen, Michael Bolton's lit. If you're gonna get trashed at a concert, why not Michael Bolton?
Alex says, I went to see Rush with my dad around 2008 when the concert was over. The parking lot was not releasing cars for around 2 hours. Turns out two police officers were killed across the street during the concert. Oh, my God. I did not know where that was going as I was reading through it.
took a hard, so you Ron Burgundy at a tweet?
I did. Happens to me. That took a hard turn. That does sound like a terrible concert experience.
Happens to me all the time. No, I've not had a bad concert experience until Saturday at Garth Brooks when we all literally almost drowned inside a 70,000-seat stadium. It was not great. And getting out of there was hell. The poor Uber driver that picked me up, I just got into his car soaking wet. There's no towels. There's no nothing protecting the leather. See, it's like one of these Model S, I think, Teslas. And I'm just drenched in the backseat of his car, smelling like wet dog and vodka. Not great.
Where do the Titans need to make the most strides in week 2 of camp? Quarterback center exchange, kicking, Tannehill interceptions. 77% say it is kicking. 15% say it's the interceptions. 8% say QB center exchange.
All right, so I'm vastly more worried about the kicking than I am the other two. The kicking, and they've started to rotate through players, which is what we all demand, right? Now, remember what Mickey Ryan said, of course, Blaine and Mickey coming up next, that in waiting to sign Steven Gostkowski, if that is still a part of their plan, until after the regular season starts, that allows them to have the wiggle room to not guarantee his salary for the year, whereas signing him now would guarantee the salary, and that may be a part of their strategy. It'd make a hell of a lot more sense than just letting the dude rot out in Franklin when he could be out here actually making field goals, unlike the rest of the kickers.
Last one of the day, the U.S. men's national team beating Mexico in back-to-back finals. Big deal, little deal, or no deal? 67% say big deal, which it is. 23% say little deal. 10% say no deal.
Okay, so we'll finish the show with Alexi Lalas crying because that was the most ridiculous thing I've seen on television. Thank God we finally got to that. A tremendous, it was a good victory for what is that, the C squad? For the United States men's national team?
Yeah, largely a BC squad, if you're going with those terms. For Mexico, we'll say an A-minus squad. Most of the same players that you saw in the Nations League final for Mexico a couple months ago. For the U.S., hardly any.
John Glennon of Broadway Sports gave me a C-plus, B-minus, so we'll go with that. Listen, they gutted it out. It was a good win. It's the first time since 2007 that they've beat Mexico back-to-back finals. It was very impressive. Very impressive performance by the goaltender, but I laughed out loud. It completely ruined the celebration for me when I was watching Alexi Lalas sob on the Fox set last night. Do we have the sound? Can I make fun of him?
We do, but I do want to. I'm not one to defend Alexi Lalas, but it was an emotional night for a kind of hodgepodge group of young MLS players that thought they would never really have a chance in this tournament.
An emotional night for the team, not for Alexi Lalas. Alexi Lalas has no part.
An emotional night for the team means an emotional night for USA Soccer, and Alexi Lalas, whether you love him or hate him, is a significant part of USA Soccer.
I thought Alexi Lalas was going to, like, you know, Cam Newton Superman with the American flag under his shirt or something like that, with the way that he got so emotional.
And it's just a game, and there will be other games against Mexico. I don't know. It's everything. It's this incredible crowd. It's the way that they. It's America. It makes me very happy and very proud. And I know it's just sports. It's just soccer and all that. But
the depths this program has been in, and to dig themselves out and then mow not once. But...
The voice crack where he just says it's everything.
It was a great win, a great moment for a guy like Miles Robinson, and that was just awesome to watch.
Yes, so shame on Alexi Lalas for crying and ruining it for everybody. Blaine and Mickey will not ruin the rest of your afternoon. They will keep the entertainment going. We will talk to you again tomorrow, live at St. Thomas Sports Park for training camp. Kevin Byard will join us. See you then.